Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. no pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. When Braceless Pizza drove off a 25-foot embankment in front of Castaic Lake in California, investigators believe that he had decided to take his own life. After all, his friends had reported that he had been behaving erratically, drinking heavily, and taking drugs. He had given his roommate his Xbox and a pair of diamond earrings that had been gifted to him by his mother. He had broken up with his girlfriend out of the blue. But only a small amount of Bryce's blood was found inside of his wrecked vehicle, and bloodhounds later tracked his scent to a nearby truck stop. This made some people wonder, did Bryce take his own life, or simply decide to start a new one? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Bryce Laspisa. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back. Our first three-parter.
Thank you for joining us once again. Ethan is very surly with me right now.
I'm very annoyed. Yes, I understand there's a lot of information with this case, but like,
it's late and he has to work in the morning and I've already made him redo a hall bathroom.
Yeah. Like, I'm tired.
I know. I'm sorry. I
need to go to sleep.
I know. And we will.
And we haven't even recorded, like, you know, one of my shows in several weeks.
For those of you who are on our Patreon, Ethan has a show. It's called Unplugged from the Darkness. It is a show that talks about, like, mental health issues and, you know, I'll let you describe it. It's your show.
I mean, that's it.
Okay. Yeah.
You described it perfectly.
Okay, perfect.
It's talking about mental health issues, and it's very short. It's 10 minutes, give or take.
You know,
it's not meant to be like a full-on other show. But we also haven't recorded. I've had one written.
I know.
For a while now.
I know. But it's like honestly going to be a really difficult one.
Yeah.
To record.
I thought that you might have had some.
Maybe I'm slightly avoiding it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am slightly, but I'm going to do it and we're going to do it. And I actually have an idea for the next one. And so I think we can just do two at once.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, you need to tell me said idea so that I can write it.
It'll be fine. But so we will hopefully be able to record those soon and get those out on our Patreon page. So I do apologize for that. Like everything else, delay wise, it is my fault. So remember, if you want to join us on Patreon, you can always do that at patreon.com/ATTWGpod, or, you know, don't, because like we love that you're here in any form.
Yes. Yeah. Anybody that's listening, look, we love you.
It's amazing. But again, enough about that. Enough about us. Who cares?
Yeah.
Let's get back talk about Bryce and like finish this story. I mean, for now, because obviously with all
it's
of our
still
cases,
ongoing. Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't cover solved cases. So this is absolutely still ongoing. I hope that even though the information I'm about to give in this episode has not been reported on, I do hope that, you know, we will eventually do a part four. Like, you know, with every case that we have, I hope that we'll eventually be able to do another episode because we want more information. You know, we want conclusions. We want the families to find peace, you know, the friends, the people who missed, you know.
That's the whole point of this podcast. Is to bring attention to cases and have the internet sleuths go in, have the armchair detectives go in and investigate, because, you know, if we're talking about these cases, then more than likely the actual detectives have reached a dead end, and there's a whole lot of bureaucratic red tape that, you know, they can't cross to get help.
Right.
But we can.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to is The Murder Squad, and, you know, with Billy Jensen and Paul Holes, and they talk a lot about, like, you've just got to get loud and you've got to talk about these things, and talking about them and getting publicity is how you get overworked cold case units to pay attention, and overworked detectives to pay attention.
Yes, and that's also not knocking the detectives or anybody in there, because in those units, because you're right, they are overworked. Yeah. That, like, you know, they get a huge caseload and they're expected to be, you know, a number one solving all of these cases.
Right.
And more often than not, they may be cold case detectives, but they're still detectives. So they're probably still taking real, you know,
oftentimes, like,
lifetime cases, you know,
right.
it varies sure,
but jurisdiction or whatever.
But look, the bottom line is that in a lot of these cases, we need help.
Yeah.
And the help doesn't come from anybody other than people that are listening right now.
People, like, talk about these cases, talk about these people.
Yeah, get their names out, get their pictures out.
Yeah.
Get the information out there, and maybe it will lead to, like we say at the end of every episode, bringing someone home.
Right. So this week, we're going to examine the evidence that points to Bryce still being out there somewhere. I left you last week with a Reddit user who calls themselves Anonymous Hooligan and claims to be an insider, basically. They said on the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit, quote, "I can say with certainty that there are issues between Bryce and his family. While Bryce's mother, Karen, is an unrepentant psycho, I am told that Bryce had a tight, borderline codependent relationship with her in the years leading up to his disappearance, but not much is known about their relationship in the final year or so. His relationship with his father, Mike, was at times very tumultuous, as Mike would lose his temper, yell, and scream at Bryce over things as trivial as not understanding how to complete his math homework. I don't know if the relationship was ever physically violent, but there was most definitely a lot of verbal/emotional abuse going on in that household, and not just with Bryce." End quote.
Yeah, and I said last episode, you know, we have to take that with a grain of salt. We don't know who this user is, you know, but at the same time, I don't want that user to necessarily think that I'm discrediting them, because, you know, I don't know who they are. I don't know what insider information they have.
Right.
It does certainly fit. It their information fits more with my theory going into the case that something was going on at home, and that's why there was so much anxiety and trepidation and hesitation on him going home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with the angle that he was sitting at a rest stop waiting for drugs.
Yeah. Which is something that we talked about a lot last week,
right,
which is a very popular theory among several of the Reddit users, you know, that I came across.
I think that he was going through a tremendous amount of anxiety about going home, and for whatever reason, he had something that he wanted to tell his parents,
mm-hmm,
that was not going to fit with their lives, whatever it was. Maybe he was quitting school. My first thought was he was gay and wanted to come out.
Mm-hmm.
There's no evidence of any of that. I have no idea. I'm posturing theories, but it seems to me that there was something keeping him from going home.
Yeah, for sure.
And then clearly, like, there's some other issues, because I do agree with there was a possible attempt with him taking his life. Mm-hmm. He didn't go in, he didn't walk into the lake. I think that he went off on his own.
Yeah, and that's interesting because, I mean, briefly, and this isn't, you know, again, we're not really covering the suicide angle in this episode, but walking into a lake and drowning yourself is an exceptionally difficult thing to do physiologically.
Yes, your body will not let you actually drown yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible, but like unassisted, without like, you know, having rocks or cinder blocks or whatever mm-hmm. keeping you down, it's really difficult to do that.
Yeah. Your body just naturally fights against that so much that it's just incredibly, incredibly physiologically difficult to do.
Yeah.
Like, that is like one of the hardest ways you can choose to try to end your own life. And so that in and of itself really makes me doubt that theory. And I'll get to more reasons during the course of this about why I also kind of doubt that theory. But yeah, so getting back to this Reddit user that I mentioned, Anonymous Hooligan, they made several posts in this thread. Another excerpt from one of his posts answers a question that I had at the very beginning of part one of this series, like the very first question I had, which is, why would somebody go to community college 8 hours away from home?
Right. It's not saving you any money.
Right.
I mean, exactly. Well, I guess it is.
I mean, it is compared to like a insanely full-blown expensive college. Sure.
But you're still driving that distance.
Yeah.
You know, you have to pay for an apartment. Mm-hmm. Like, the apartment was probably cheaper than living in an apartment in Laguna Beach.
Maybe, yeah, probably, but I mean, but
it's not convenient.
No, it was a very weird kind of confusing move. And so this person said, quote, Karen and Mike shopped around for what school he would attend, gave him no decision in the matter, and shipped him out when the school year began, end quote. They contend that Bryce's parents exerted control via the things that they bought him, the car, the cell phone, his laptop, etc., and that they had access to all of it. Now, to a degree, we've actually seen that this is the case. His parents had access to his phone, at least to a degree, because, again, he was on their plan, so they were able to get permission to ping his phone very quickly when they filed that missing persons report. They had access to his credit card because they saw what charges he made, and they paid for his car insurance, so when he used that insurance to call roadside assistance, they were immediately notified.
Okay, so while I agree with you,
yeah,
I am also going to play devil's advocate here. He's a 19-year-old kid. While that could fit the narrative of a controlling parent, it could also fit the narrative of a helpful parent.
Yes.
Providing their child with all of these things.
That is 100% correct.
And
because I didn't have any of that. In college, that's fine. Had to do it all myself.
Neither Whatever. Did I. But
I had plenty of friends who were in this exact same situation.
Yeah.
But those friends, and I can think of one in particular who was my roommate, her parents would actually threaten her.
They absolutely did.
They were like, we pay for your car and we can take it away. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
So, yes. Even if their intentions were good, like, I could absolutely see them still using it as a method of control.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't mean to bring that up because I tend to agree with the other side that it was a controlling factor.
Yeah.
However, I just wanted to present the opposite side where it's not. It's not 100% like dastardly villain.
No.
Parents. It's parents that wanted to help out their child, but also had access to all of these things.
Yeah, I don't think it's black and white at all.
Yeah.
Anonymous Hooligan thinks that Bryce was sick of this control, though. And they believe that that was the big thing that Bryce wanted to tell his parents, that he was done. But they contend that he chickened out and just kind of left instead of telling them face to face. They said, quote, "To me, his actions were a great big fuck you to his manipulative, controlling, abusive parents. What better way to let them know you're done than by intentionally wrecking their car and leaving behind all the accoutrements they paid for with their money and leveraged as a means of control," end quote.
Again, I mean, I can 100% see that. If that's the narrative we're going with, that it fits, it makes sense.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because we've had so many cases where the police are like, maybe they just walked away and started a new life. And it is literally my least favorite thing to hear. But this is one of those cases where I'm like, well, shit, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, Daniel Yuen, the one who ran away from CDU school. Like, yeah. He's another one who I like absolutely do believe.
I believe he's out there alive right now.
Yeah.
Has his own family and he left a bad situation and made his own life.
And decided to stay gone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
And so this is another one where I was like, maybe. Because typically when they leave behind their cell phone and their wallet, I'm like, oh my God, give me a break. Nobody does that. But the point that they make, you know, that he was leaving behind all of the things that his parents gave him and paid for, I don't know. I can kind of see it.
Yeah, I can totally see it too. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too into my own life, mm-hmm. you know, because that's
what the other show is.
Unplugged from the Darkness. But there was definitely a time when I wanted to escape a situation.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough that I had an out.
Right.
That others don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can definitely see doing something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
And especially if, again, he had been abusing this medication, Vyvanse.
Oh, sure,
right?
Yeah.
He had been drinking. He hadn't been sleeping. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all of
it
that.
It all builds up. And,
yeah.
You know, you get into a catastrophic state of mind
yes.
where it's this or nothing. And then an attempt on his life that fails.
Right.
Then you're left with, I went to the extreme of trying to commit suicide and it didn't work. Now what?
Right.
That completely alters your frame of mind. On top of all, everything, it's compounding.
Yeah.
So it is very realistic, you know, to have something like this happen where you're freaking out. And you press the gas, you mash the gas, and you go down this embankment, and you're like, I'm doing it, whatever. And it doesn't work. And you wake up, you get out of the car, and you're like, well, fuck. But you still can't go back to the life that you were trying to leave. So maybe you just walk up the road to a truck stop, and you disappear. It's totally plausible. I'm not saying that's what happened.
Right.
I don't know, but it's completely plausible.
Many other people believe that Bryce's scent ending at that truck stop indicates that he wasn't spending all that time in Buttonwillow waiting for a drug dealer. Some people think not that what you said, that him walking away was kind of a split-second decision after his attempt to take his own life failed. Some people think that he had planned this from the beginning, and that he had actually been waiting for a ride.
Okay, but how far away is this truck stop where his scent ended versus Buttonwillow?
No, so Castaic Lake, which is where he ended up,
yeah,
is an hour and a half or 2 hours from Buttonwillow.
Okay. But there's no cell phone usage that we know of after the crash, before the crash.
No, but one of the theories is that because Bryce's parents, his cell phone was on their plane or whatever. One theory is that Bryce had a burner phone and that any communication he was doing outside of the conversations that he was having with his parents were done from that phone.
Okay, so the theory is that he staged this, the car accident?
Yeah, maybe. That he intentionally wrecked the car.
I have a hard time with that, given the fact that there's evidence that he was actually in the car when the car crashed.
Right, yeah. Because that's a very dicey proposition.
Yeah, like, you make this plan to have somebody, like, come and pick you up at this truck stop,
yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna crash my car.
There are less, like, potentially fatal ways to do that.
I mean,
right.
How about just not being in the car?
Yeah, and just rolling it down the hill?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, like, letting the car go.
Yeah, and one of the things that the detective specifically said in that disappeared episode was that the speed that I mentioned in the last episode really did indicate that he was pressing down on the gas and not that the car was in neutral.
Right, and there's no evidence that there was, like, a knife in the...
That he could have, like, cut himself to, like, give the blood or whatever, you mean?
No, I mean, like, there was no evidence of anything, like, pressing down on the gas other than his foot.
Oh, yeah, no.
There wasn't, like...
A brick, like in Ferris Bueller?
Sure. Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah, no, you know? No, nothing.
There wasn't, like,
that.
Like, a knife stuck in the floorboard pinning the gas pedal.
No, absolutely not.
So,
there was nothing that indicated that Bryce wasn't in that car when it went over the embankment.
Right, so again, that's an extreme that I don't necessarily believe.
Yeah.
Could be, but I don't...
Well, and we'll talk a little bit more about that going on. But yeah, I mean, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I feel like if you wanted to just wreck the car...
Just roll the fucking car down the hill.
Yeah.
And then...
Or leave. Just like crash it into something like on flat land, not down.
Yeah, that level yeah. of going out of the way,
yeah.
damaging the car, all of that's too elaborate to...
Right.
To just, like, stick it to your parents.
Yeah, and I would tend to agree. But along the whole lines of this, like, being planned, or, you know, him, like, planning from the beginning, you know, to kind of walk away, is that some sources I've read have even claimed that the duffel bag that was found was actually found unzipped. So that led to speculation that Bryce didn't leave the crash site empty-handed. Like, it appeared that he did, right? Because it appeared that he left with nothing.
Okay, but where is that source coming from, that the duffel bag?
It's just other random, like, I have read so many articles on this, and, like, I've read a few that said that it was unzipped. So I don't know if it was or not, because I read one that said it was empty, and I don't actually think that that's the case at all. But yeah, so there is a possibility that he had something in that duffel bag that he wanted to take with him. But going back to your earlier point about when he gave police consent to search his car, you believe that from a practical standpoint, they also would have had consent to search his duffel bag. And if they didn't, it would have been notated, which it wasn't. That if he had had anything of interest, that would have been known by now, right? So, like, if he had a fake ID, if he had cash, yeah, if he had anything.
Let me tell you from my personal experience and legitimately searching a lot of bags.
Uh-huh.
Like, you go through everything. You empty out the bag. If you get consent to search a bag, you don't just kind of, like, stick your hand through and search for hard objects.
Right, not like you're searching the bag to get into a baseball game.
No.
Right? I mean, because they just, like, kind of stick their hand
in. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
That's not what happens when you get consent to search a bag. When you get consent to search a bag, you empty the contents of that bag.
Right.
And you inventory it. I mean, obviously you're not inventorying it on a report at this point because
right.
you got consent to search, but let me tell you, you don't leave a corner in that bag unturned.
Right. And I feel like, you know, this case was 8 years ago. There was a whole episode that disappeared on it. I think if there had been anything interesting in that bag, at some point the officer would have been like,
would have been
oh, by the way.
Reported. Yes. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, There's no way that there was anything nefarious in the bag.
Right. So, like, maybe he took something, but, like, it couldn't have been anything.
Maybe he grabbed a hoodie. I don't know. Who knows?
Right? Yeah. It, I mean,
or
that
maybe,
I could see.
Maybe it was unzipped because it was just fucking unzipped.
Yeah.
Maybe it hadn't been completely zipped back up from the cops searching it.
Exactly.
Who knows?
So, again, it's tough when we're dealing with anonymous people on the internet. But what I will say is that other people came forward who claimed to have known Bryce in high school at Naperville Central High School. And they also kind of say that the image that Karen and Mike have been projecting in the media, like, isn't exactly true. Karen has consistently described her son as having no issues, like maybe dabbling with drugs and alcohol a little bit, but in a normal college way. But like, he was great. He was well-liked. He had no problems. They were close. Everything was just perfect, right? And that is very much the impression that she is consistently given in any interview or anything since Bryce disappeared. But former classmates have said that he not only smoked weed in high school, he was also known to bring alcohol to school. But pot also wasn't the only drug that Bryce was dabbling in back then. Back in Naperville, when Bryce was in high school, he was arrested for possessing MDMA.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And to me, like, that's big, you know, like that's not something that you just come across. Like, I don't know. I mean, I I'm not a drug person. I've never been a drug person. So like the idea of like, where do you find MDMA this time of night? But like, I don't know. That just seems like a lot to me. Well, and I fully admit I'm very naive.
Yeah, you are. But it's. That's also something very specific. People smoke pot.
Yeah. Whatever. I feel like that would be easy. And so if he had been arrested
It was easier for me to get pot in high school than it was to get alcohol.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So like, but other drugs, MDMA, like I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, I associated with everybody in high school.
And you grew up you were in high school in a city. Like I was. Yeah. In a suburban high school.
Yeah, no, and I was in a city high school. Not a bad high school by any means, but like it was a lot easier to get drugs than it was alcohol.
Right.
But MDMA is very specific.
Yeah, I thought so too. Because like if he had been arrested for possessing weed, I'd been like, okay, well, you know, shit happens, whatever. But yeah, arrested for MDMA. Which to me, like, obviously I'm not saying that makes them a bad person by any means.
No, he was a high
school kid. But what I am saying is that is absolutely not in line with the narrative that we have been given since 2013.
Right. That there were clearly issues.
Exactly. This didn't come out of nowhere because every single interview, especially that disappeared episode, presents it as if this all started 2 weeks prior to his disappearance.
You said he got arrested for MDMA?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not something that like the parents were blind to.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was clearly more going on than the Las Pisas were letting on. I read about this MDMA bus. And so I was kind of Googling around about it to see if I could find more information. And I was doing that tonight, right before we started recording. Because again, like I said, at the beginning of the last episode, we've gotten very behind in the schedule.
So like everything that we do in life, we're just guerrilla styling this right now.
Yes, that's our life. And so I was about to leave Reddit and Anonymous Hooligan behind and, you know, move on. Because like those comments that I read about, you know, Karen and Bryce and their relationship, et cetera, those were from like 2 years ago.
Really? Her name's Karen?
I know.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
I know. But when I was Googling about this MDMA bust, one of the top results was a different thread on Reddit where Anonymous Hooligan posted again, but this one was from less than a week ago. In this post, they say that they're now able to reveal more information, like they've gotten permission to reveal more information. So my impression when I read this was that this person knew the family, but didn't necessarily know Bryce, because everything they said about Bryce was like very much seemed kind, secondhand.
Kind of general information.
Yeah. This post that I read said that this MDMA arrest was incredibly embarrassing to Mike and Karen, that they had worked very hard to project this image of having a perfect family. And so when their teenage son got arrested for this drug, they did not react well. And again, I don't think I would react well. Like, you know, I would not react well.
No, you wouldn't. But I don't think it's something that we would hide from people either.
We wouldn't, you're right.
Necessarily
I don't know that
broadcast
we would,
but exactly. we wouldn't go out of our way to hide it. You know, like
If, we wouldn't like post about it on Facebook.
Well, clearly no, because that is embarrassing. But like at the same time, we wouldn't. I mean, look, shit happens.
Yeah.
You know, kids do shit, especially when they're teenagers.
Right.
You know, I mean, I did a lot of shit. I just didn't get caught.
Right.
You know, so I think there's just a different temperament and personality and parenting.
Yeah.
Between the way we would handle things versus, and I'm not saying ours is better.
This person also alleges that Mike and Karen gave Bryce an ultimatum that he needed to stay off drugs or they would cut off his financial support. And part of the reason that they chose Sierra College for him is that it was a community college, so cheap, but it also offered dorms, which most community colleges do not.
Wait, I thought he was staying in an apartment, though.
He was. Allegedly, according to this person, that's not where Bryce started. Bryce started his freshman year in the dorms at Sierra College, but he was kicked out of the dorms his freshman year for partying-related offenses. And that is what led to him living in this off-campus apartment. So if this is true, it has absolutely been left out of the entire narrative that his parents have been presenting for almost 8 years. And another thing that has allegedly been left out, it's a big one. In the Disappeared episode and in every single article I've read about Bryce's case, he's always referred to as the only child of Karen and Mike Laspisa. In fact, that is how I introduced part one. Like, that was like the very beginning of the episode. I said that he was the only child and that Mike adopted him when he was two. And we don't know anything about his biological father. Yeah, that's not the case. Anonymous Hooligan said, I'm going to tell you right off the bat that this is the information that has not been covered anywhere else. This person posted this on Reddit a few days ago, but to my knowledge, that is the only public source of this information. So this person, Anonymous Hooligan, said, quote, Bryce Laspisa was not an only child. I repeat, Bryce Laspisa was not an only child. It has not been mentioned yet that Mike Laspisa has a child from a previous marriage who is 5 years Bryce's elder, but there you have it. Bryce's stepsister lived with her mother until her untimely demise at the age of 13. So Bryce's sister's mom died when Bryce's sister was 13. It's worded a little confusingly. And that is when the sister began to live permanently with Mike and Karen. To put it bluntly, Karen horribly abused her, and the resulting mental health challenges, PTSD among others, that arose from the abuse prompted Karen and Mike to kick her out of the home, cut her off financially, and ultimately abandon her at a time in her life when she needed it most. End quote. Yeah.
What the fuck? Really?
There's a whole ass other sister that they have never mentioned publicly.
Holy shit.
A sister that they decided had gone off the rails in some regard and allegedly completely cut off and disowned.
Can we verify this at all?
Okay. So I read that. I was like, well, that's some shit.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is also, again, coming from an anonymous
source
on
and people
Reddit.
Are crazy.
So
I included this.
Yeah.
Not to slander the parents of a missing person, because I always, again, try to be very sensitive to the family members.
Sure.
Because they're going through the worst possible thing. But I wanted to bring it up to show that maybe, just maybe, the idea that Bryce walked away from his life isn't as crazy as it may seem on the surface. And this poster's continuous interest in this case, because again, those first posts were from 2 years ago. This one was from like 5 days ago.
Right.
And their seemingly insider knowledge like did pique my interest. I was like, is this person full of shit? Or like, what is actually happening here? Because on this last post, you know, this last couple of posts on this thread from a few days ago, people did start to push back. They're like, listen, I don't know who you are, but you seem mad. And like, you're just saying shit that has nothing to do with the official narrative. I don't know who you are. You seem like you're just saying things, right? So,
which, you know, is my take.
Right, right.
But at the same time, I don't want to discredit this person because we don't know.
Yeah. So this evening, right before we started recording this, actually, like as we were putting our youngest child to bed, I reached out to Anonymous Hooligan and they wrote back.
Okay. Okay. What? What did they say?
Yeah, so we chatted for a little while, and they revealed their connection to the family with me.
And they're okay with us?
Yes, yes.
Putting this on there, okay.
Yes, and they gave me other identifying information. This person told me that ultimately, they're okay with Karen and or Mike confronting them about this, but they would like to stay as anonymous as possible. Which I respect because, like, I'm not in the business of doxing people.
No, yeah, absolutely.
On this podcast, right? Yeah. Like, I'm a realtor who has a fucking podcast. Like, I'm not, you know, like, let's be real. If somebody wants to stay anonymous, I'm going to let them stay anonymous. But I didn't want to, you know, I'm reading all these posts and I didn't want to talk about them if this person was just some dumbass on the internet, you know?
Right.
And so I reached out and I was like, hey, especially so after that post about the sister, because I can't remember if it was that post or another one, they said something to the effect of like, if the moderators would like information that backs up my claims, like I'm happy to provide that publicly, but like I'm not going to post it on here,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
And so I messaged them and yeah. I was like, hey, listen, do you have anything that could like back up what you're saying about the sister? And they were like, well, I mean, I don't have anything that like backs up the claims of abuse and, you know, obviously.
Even the sister being alive.
Yes. So yeah. That is what they provided to me. Like that is, they provided me enough information that, yes, like there's a sister. And she's out there.
I mean, that in and of itself
yeah.
says that the parents are lying, as far as the public narrative goes.
Right, right.
Holy shit.
Again, I talked more to this person and I asked them like how they're connected to the family. Because from all the posts, like I said earlier, I didn't get the impression that they knew Bryce specifically, but that they did know the family. And that is correct. So this person did not know Bryce, had never met Bryce, but they do know Mike very well. However, they do not know Karen. So all of their knowledge and impressions of her come from the family members that they are connected to. So we do need to say that this person's impressions of Karen are based on other people's impressions of her and not direct knowledge. But they say that the stories that they've heard have been confirmed by other people in the family. So there's that. I just want to be very careful with how I present this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's a very dicey kind of...
It's a very delicate
place
situation
that we're in right now.
Yeah.
But because I spent some time speaking with this person, I'm comfortable talking more about what they have to say. I have their permission to quote part of our personal conversation in which they say what they believe happened to Bryce.
Okay, let's hear it.
Quote, I suspect he was hanging around in Button Willow, waiting for a friend to show up. I think they were coming from a few states away, and he got there early. He had to make it seem like he was bringing the vehicle home, Mike and Karen's vehicle. We suspect they told him to bring the car home immediately, which explains his hesitance to leave Button Willow even when the tow truck driver and later the police are hassling him at his parents' request. To get hassled by them was probably the last straw for him. So instead of bringing home their car, he wrecks it and disappears. Probably had a friend with him and they split. End quote.
Okay. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that. There's still evidence that he was in the car.
Yes.
When.
And I don't think this person even thinks that he wasn't in the car. Like, I do think that this person believes that Bryce was in the car, though I did not ask them that specifically.
Sure. But that's to be in a car when you wreck it.
Right.
Like, that's.
In that way.
Yes.
Right.
That's.
Because, like, I've been in car accidents, like, whatever.
Sure.
But I mean,
so have I,
not. But... I haven't driven off a cliff.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I have the hang up.
Right.
And I'm not saying this person is wrong. I just, if you're going to that length to mm-hmm. plan this out, and the plan is to wreck the car, why would you put yourself in the car?
In that amount of danger.
Yes.
I can see you putting yourself in the car, but not, again, off a cliff.
Yeah, that's right? My point.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if you're going to drive the car off of a cliff or an embankment or whatever you want to call it, why would you be in the car?
Right.
Why wouldn't you put something, Ferris Bueller,
put a brick on
put a rock or something on the gas pedal and let it go and then take the rock off after it crashes if you want to hide that. Putting yourself in the car, and there's strong evidence that he was in the car.
Yeah.
After the crash.
Right.
That's where I have the hang up. I'm not saying this person is wrong.
No. But maybe the person is like 75% correct, right?
Yeah. No, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was certainly interesting. And so I'm going to go back to one of the things that they said, which was, quote, we suspect they told him to bring the car home immediately. And so my follow-up question to that was, I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, when do you think that they told him that? Do you think that was the 1 a.m. call? Remember, that 1 a.m. call was the call that Karen says happened, and she talks about in the Disappeared episode, but she does not talk about what was said on that call.
Right.
And so this person thinks that likely that's what the 1 a.m. call was get your butt back to Laguna Niguel, give us the car, we are done with this.
That does fit better than my narrative.
Yeah, I mean,
which was that he was afraid to tell them something.
Right.
No, that does. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So this person and I talked more after this, and they revealed some other information that they did not want me to share publicly. It was, as they said, very sensitive information. So what I will say about that is that if you go to Reddit and you read this person's posts about this case and you think, man, this person seems pretty angry, this is accurate. And based on what they told me, I understand where they're coming from. Now, again, I have to say that this person never met Bryce, So they certainly don't have any definitive information on what happened to him after the car accident, but they do not believe that he harmed himself. They do not believe that he decided to take his own life that day. And as of this moment, there's really no hard evidence to say that this person is wrong in that assessment.
That's very true.
In fact, in the years following Bryce's disappearance, many more searches of Castaic Lake have been performed. Around the 2-year anniversary in 2015, Karen posted on the Find Bryce Lapisa Facebook page, quote, "Last week, Mike and I were up at Castaic Lake. We hired a sonar boat that searched for 2 days and did not find any human remains. Our private investigator had a drone operator searching the area north of the boat launch access road. Nothing was found." End quote. Yes, it's a big lake, but 2 days with sonar in addition to the initial search.
Yeah, and whoever this person is on Reddit, it's the at this point in the investigation, it seems like that's the only viable lead. I don't know whether the detectives working this case have gone into this. Probably yeah. not.
Well, and that's the thing. I have no idea. We know that this is not, other than their Reddit post, been discussed publicly. Like, I do know it has not been covered anywhere.
Yeah.
But we don't know what the police know, right? Like, we don't know if maybe Karen did say, okay, yes, Bryce actually did have an escalating drug issue. He got arrested for possessing MDMA in high school. Like, well, blah, 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 blah. Like, the police could know a lot more.
Well, presumably the police would know that.
Well, yes, yes. Because juvenile court records are sealed. But when you're the police, you would typically know that, right?
Outcomes of juvenile cases are sealed to police. The arrest records are not.
Right. So,
the arrest records would have been there. They would have gotten that information before even talking to, when it gets to the detective level, like, they would have gotten that information already.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have seen that he had an arrest record for drugs. The outcome of that case would have been blocked from them. And then they would have talk to Karen about that.
Yeah. Be like,
hey.
Remember how you said this came out of nowhere?
Yeah, except it didn't, because here we have evidence of X, Y, and Z. But the reality is, you know, this Reddit user publicly hasn't come forward until now.
Well, so they originally started posting about this case 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's when they had several posts on the Unresolved Mysteries thread talking basically about how toxic Karen is and how, you know, she and Bryce had this unhealthy relationship and how he did have issues beyond what she was saying publicly. But the whole thing about Bryce having a sister and, you know, all this other stuff, this just came out less than a week ago.
Right. And that's the part that blows my mind, is the sister part.
Yeah, me too.
So, like, look, you know, we're not here to judge how anybody parents. If somebody has a child that goes missing, like, you know, we're not here to judge how they parent.
No, not at all.
However, when you present a public narrative as a parent of a missing person,
right,
and you leave out an entire fucking child and you present your family life as something different than what it is, there's a problem with that because it impedes the investigation.
Well, exactly.
That's my issue. It's not so much the social aspect of it, which is what they were doing, is covering their ass. If this is true,
mm-hmm.
It's covering their ass socially. But the problem with that is that it impedes an actual investigation. If you are not forthcoming with information, if you truly want your child to be found.
Right. And interestingly, 2 years ago, on that original thread that I was talking about, a lot of people are like, you know, I get the impression that Karen, like, not that she had anything to do with Bryce's disappearance, like not that she did anything nefarious, but they're like, I really get the impression that she's holding something back, that she's not being completely upfront, whatever, whatever. And, you know, I obviously, like, I read that. I'm like, I don't like it when we judge moms in these situations.
Gotta take it with
like,
a grain of salt.
Like, I don't love that.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I don't like shitty people on the internet.
But
then, you know, today I read this whole other ass sister. Oh, by the way, this person refers to the sister as Bryce's stepsister, or I'm sorry, half sister, because it was his dad, Mike's child from a previous marriage. But that's not exactly accurate because much like Mike adopted Bryce when Bryce was two, and became his dad. Karen adopted this girl after her biological mother died when she was 13. And Karen became her mom.
Wow.
So this isn't a situation where, like, you married a guy and he had a child from another marriage and, like, okay, you didn't really have a relationship with them, so why would you bring it up in the disappeared episode? This child came to live with them when she was 13 and Karen adopted her. She was their daughter who lived in their house, who went to the same high school as Bryce. Granted, she's 5 years older than him, so they weren't there at the same time.
Sure, but whatever.
But they both went to Naperville Central High School.
Legacy, yeah.
They were a family of four. But then when they decided that she had gone off the rails or whatever, they cut her off and basically just stopped acknowledging her publicly. So to me, I'm not interested so much in making judgments about that. But what I am saying is that is extremely relevant information. This is kind of what you were just saying in a case like this.
Yes. Because it's pertinent information in the investigation of a missing person.
Yeah. Because the public narrative for 8 years has been, this came out of nowhere. He was a happy, well-adjusted kid. We had a great family. We were all very
close.
But
that's not the case.
Yeah.
And that alters the investigation.
Right.
And it's not, on a detective level, it's not putting blame on the parent. What it does do is it changes the way you investigate things.
Now, to be fair, I do want to say that there's a very good chance that the detectives have known about the sister the entire time.
Probably.
Right? Probably. And it could be that this actually didn't materially infect the investigation from that perspective.
That could also be true. That could also
However, any missing persons investigation, as we talk about so often, does need public support.
Yes.
It needs people keeping an eye out. It needs people keeping an ear out. It needs people coming forward with information that they may have, no matter how insignificant they think it is. So while there is value in not giving every detail of an investigation to the public,
sure,
the public needs to have a clear enough picture
of what was going on. And,
yeah.
And potentially why somebody could have walked away.
Yeah. Because, all right, so let's say that I'm somebody who lives in California or whatever, and I've heard about this case, but the prevailing theory from law enforcement is that he took his own life. And what if I see somebody who, like, kind of looks like him down the street, but I'm like, well, you know, but it can't be him. Like, I heard about this case.
He killed himself.
Right.
Right.
I'm not going to call that in.
Agreed.
Why would I? That would seem crazy.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. It changes the narrative of the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that when I say that, it doesn't necessarily mean that it changes the narrative of how the detectives investigate.
Right.
What it does is it changes the information that is put out to the public. It changes the information that is needed from the public to help the investigation.
Yeah.
And that's where it alters. And somebody saving face publicly or social media wise, great, good for you. But if you want to find out where your kid is, you have to put that information out. As bad as it may seem, as damning as it is to you, you can't hide that. And you don't have to go into detail. You can say, like, we didn't have the best relationship.
Right.
And leave it at that. And leave it as a question mark with the possibility that he walked out on his own to get away from you.
Yeah.
But if you want to find out where he is legitimately, you have to present an accurate picture of potentially why he left. Not why he left, but if he left on his own instead of committing suicide. Because those are the two options. Right now, the prevailing theory is that he committed suicide, but there's evidence clearly, which we just talked about, that he didn't commit suicide, that he walked away.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole other shit that they're hiding from the public narrative. Why?
Yeah, and I'm all for not airing your dirty laundry in public.
Again, but you don't have to give every dirty detail,
but you gotta
give something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's
you're doing the investigation, you're doing your son a disservice if you just present this narrative that everything was fine and he was great.
Everything was white picket fence.
And it came out of nowhere.
Suburban life. Because everything was great. And then he just suddenly...
In our very first episode, I compared this case to a slow-moving car crash.
Yes.
And I feel like that's even more true now because it wasn't just August 28th to August 30th when the actual events took place. This had been going on for years. This had been going on since he was in high school. The signs were there that something was going to happen. He got arrested in high school. He got kicked out of his dorm freshman year of college. There were signs. There were signs that stretched over the course of years. And I'm not saying that that means the parents could have prevented what happened necessarily. But what I am saying is that you cannot present this as something that came out of nowhere.
Right. Yes, exactly. And what it seems like is that whoever this person is providing an actual narrative
mm-hmm.
that retrofitting it makes a whole lot of sense. And what it shows is controlling. It shows the control factor.
Right.
So Karen and Mike have been controlling what information has been presented in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very careful about what information gets out. So we are presented with what information they want out there, not necessarily information about what was actually happening, what was actually occurring, and what the mentality of Bryce may have been at the time. It all kind of fits. It shows that Karen and Mike are really fucking controlling. And again, we don't know.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot of evidence pointing back at them. And their actions are not do not specifically directly relate to Bryce's disappearance. Kind of. It kind of does. But we're not bringing this up to blame them.
No.
But they are clearly impeding the investigation. That's the problem that I have.
Yeah.
Is that the information that is being put out there is different than what is actually occurring.
This is the case that I originally heard about a few years ago or whatever. And my general theory, not having paid much attention, just knowing the basic facts, was that he probably just decided to take his own life, right? But while there certainly is evidence that points in that direction that I'm not ignoring, that I think is absolutely valid, there's a lot of evidence that you know, doesn't point. And that sonar, that 2-day sonar search from 2015 that I mentioned, to my knowledge, you know, it was the last major search of the area. But in the intervening years, and again, we're coming up on the 8th anniversary in a few weeks, no further trace of Bryce has been found in that area. And one thing that I found interesting that I haven't seen reported elsewhere came from an interview that Bryce's roommate Sean gave to Fox 40 less than a week after Bryce's disappearance. In it, Sean said that the last night he saw Bryce, that night that he went to Kim's house, presumably to end their relationship in person, Bryce wasn't planning on coming back to the apartment after. He packed that duffel bag with a few essentials, and according to Sean, quote, he told us he would come back on Labor Day, end quote. To me, it's easy to look at the sudden breakup and his other actions, the giving away the expensive possessions, leaving behind his TV, most of his clothes, et cetera, as signs that he was going to take his own life. But I can also see it as he breaks up with his girlfriend. He gives away these possessions that were bought by his parents or gifted to him by his parents, not because he was going to take his own life, but because he wasn't coming back to this one. And even though he told his roommate Sean that he was going to be back on Labor Day, and even though he was driving toward Laguna Niguel, Bryce apparently hadn't made any plans with his parents to visit that weekend. According to everything that his parents had said, they assumed he was going back to his apartment after Kim's house. But he had already packed before he even left. He had already decided he wasn't going back to that apartment, one way or the other. Now, in 2021, with little hard evidence of what actually happened to Bryce, all we're left with is speculation. Police believe that he took his own life and reclassified his case to voluntarily missing. But Bryce's parents still hold out hope that he's out there somewhere. And the person I spoke to tonight also thinks that Bryce is out there, but that he knows exactly who he is, but decided that's not who he wanted to be any longer. There have been multiple potential sightings of Bryce over the years, both in California and in Oregon, with the latest one being in May of 2021, but none have been substantiated. What we do know is that Bryce's fingerprints and DNA are loaded into NamUs, so if he did survive that day at Castaic Lake, it's likely that he is still out there somewhere, living his life in whatever form that may take. Bryce David Laspisa has been missing from Castaic, California since August 30th, 2013. He was 5'11" and 170 pounds. He has red hair and blue eyes. He has a tattoo of a Taurus bullhead and his birthday in Roman numerals on his upper left arm and pierced ears. Bryce was 19 years old when he went missing. He would be 27 today. If you have any information on Bryce Laspisa's disappearance, please call the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office at 323-890-5500. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATZWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we are actually going to be taking next week off for a little vacation, but we will see you the week after that for a brand new episode.
See you then.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. Our research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is the Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!